Yes, Susanna of New York will begin the first round. He turned to her, lowered his voice a little, not that she reckoned that would do much good if Blaine wanted to listen, and said, "You won't have to step forward like the rest of us because of your legs, but you must speak fair and address him by name each time you talk to him. If, when he answers your riddle correctly, say, 'Thank'ee, Sai, Blaine, you have answered true,' then Jake will step into the aisle and have his turn. All right? And if he should get it wrong, or not guess at all?" Roland smiled grimly. "I think that's one thing we don't have to worry about just yet." He raised his voice again. "Blaine?"
"Yes, gunslinger."
Roland took a deep breath. "It starts now."
"Excellent."
Roland nodded at Susanna. Eddie squeezed one of her hands. Jake patted the other. Oi gazed at her raptly with his gold-ringed eyes. Susanna smiled at them nervously, then looked up at the route map.
"Hello, Blaine."
"Howdy, Susanna of New York."
Her heart was pounding, her armpits were damp, and here was something she had first discovered way back in the first grade. It was hard to begin. It was hard to stand up in front of the class and be first with your song, your joke, your report on how you spent your summer vacation, or your riddle, for that matter. The one she had decided upon was one from Jake Chambers' crazed English essay, which he had recited to them almost verbatim during their long palaver after leaving the old people of River Crossing. The essay, titled My Understanding of Truth, had contained two riddles, one of which Eddie had already used on Blaine.
"Susanna, are you there, little cowgirl?"
Teasing again, but this time the teasing sounded light, good-natured, good-humored. Blaine could be charming when he got what he wanted, like certain spoiled children she had known.
"Yes, Blaine, I am, and here's my riddle. What has four wheels and flies?"
There was a peculiar click, as if Blaine were mimicking the sound of a man popping his tongue against the roof of his mouth. It was followed by a brief pause. When Blaine replied, most of the jocularity had gone out of his voice.
"The town garbage wagon, of course. A child's riddle. If the rest of your riddles are no better, I will be extremely sorry I saved your lives for even a short while."
The route map flashed, not red this time, but pale pink.
"Don't get him mad,"
the voice of little Blaine begged. Each time it spoke, Susanna found herself imagining a sweaty little bald man whose every movement was a kind of cringe. The voice of Big Blaine came from everywhere, like the voice of God in a Cecil B. DeMille movie, Susanna thought. But little Blaine's from only one, the speaker directly over their heads.
"Please don't make him angry, fellas. He's already got the mono in the red speed-wise, and the track compensators can barely keep up. The trackage has degenerated terribly since the last time we came out this way."
Susanna, who had been on her share of bumpy trolleys and subways in her time, felt nothing. The ride was as smooth now as it had been when they had first pulled out of the cradle of Lud. But she believed little Blaine anyway. She guessed that if they did feel a bump, it would be the last thing any of them would ever feel. Roland poked an elbow into her side, bringing her back to her current situation.
"Thank'ee, Sai," she said,
and then, as an afterthought, tapped her throat rapidly 3 times with the fingers of her right hand. It was what Roland had done when speaking to Aunt Talitha for the first time.
"Thank you for your courtesy," Blaine said.
He sounded amused again, and Susanna reckoned that was good, even if his amusement was at her expense.
"I am not female, however. Insofar as I have a sex, it is male."
Susanna looked at Roland, bewildered. "Left hand for men," he said, "on the breastbone." He tapped to demonstrate.
"Oh."
Roland turned to Jake. The boy stood, put Oi on his chair, which did no good. Oi immediately jumped down and followed after Jake when he stepped into the aisle to face the route map, and turned his attention to Blaine.
"Hello, Blaine. This is Jake. You know, son of Elmer."
"Speak your riddle."
"What can run but never walks, has a mouth but never talks, has a bed but never sleeps, has a head but never weeps?"
"Not bad. One hopes Susanna will learn from your example, Jake, son of Elmer. The answer must be self-evident to anyone of any intelligence at all, but a decent effort nevertheless. A river."
"Thank'ee, Sai Blaine, you have answered true." He tapped the bunched fingers of his left hand 3 times against his breastbone and then sat down. Susanna put her arm around him and gave him a brief squeeze. Jake looked at her gratefully. Now Roland stood up. "Heil, Blaine," he said.
"Heil, gunslinger."
Once again, Blaine sounded amused, possibly by the greeting, which Susanna hadn't heard before.
"Heil what?" she wondered.
Hitler came to mind, and that made her think of the downed plane they'd found outside Ludd. A Fokker Wolf, Jake had claimed. She didn't know about that, but she knew it had contained one seriously dead Harrier, too old even to stink.
"Speak your riddle, Roland, and let it be handsome."
"Handsome is as handsome does, Blaine. In any case, here it is. What has 4 legs in the morning, 2 legs in the afternoon, and 3 legs at night?"
"That is indeed handsome," Blaine allowed. "Simple, but handsome just the same. The answer is a human being who crawls on hands and knees in babyhood, walks on 2 legs during adulthood, and who goes about with the help of a cane in old age."
Blaine sounded positively smug, and Susanna suddenly discovered a mildly interesting fact. She loathed the self-satisfied, murderous thing. Machine or not, it or he, she loathed Blaine. She had an idea she would have felt the same even if he hadn't made them wager their lives in a stupid riddling contest. Roland, however, did not look the slightest put out of countenance.
"Thank you, Cy Blaine. You have answered true."
He sat down without tapping his breastbone and looked at Eddie. Eddie stood up and stepped into the aisle.
"What's happening, Blaine, my man?" he asked.
Roland winced and shook his head, putting his mutilated right hand up briefly to shade his eyes. Silence from Blaine.
"Blaine, are you there?"
"Yes, but in no mood for frivolity, Eddie of New York. Speak your riddle. I suspect it will be difficult in spite of your foolish poses. I look forward to it." Eddie glanced at Roland, who waved a hand at him.
"Go on, for your father's sake, go on."
And then looked back at the route map, where the green dot had just passed the point marked Rylea. Susanna saw that Eddie suspected what she herself all but knew. Blaine understood they were trying to test his capabilities with a spectrum of riddles. Blaine knew and welcomed it. Susanna felt her heart sink as any hopes they might find a quick and easy way out of this disappeared. 4.
"Well," Eddie said, "I don't know how hard it'll seem to you, but it struck me as a toughie."
Nor did he know the answer, since that section of riddledy-dum had been torn out, but he didn't think that made any difference. Their knowing the answers hadn't been part of the ground rules.
"I shall hear and answer."
"No sooner spoken than broken. What is it?"
"Silence, a thing you know little about, Eddie of New York," Blaine said with no pause at all, and Eddie felt his heart drop a little.
There was no need to consult with the others. The answer was self-evident. And having it come back at him so quickly was the real bummer. Eddie never would have said so, but he had harbored the hope, almost a secret surety, of bringing Blaine down with a single riddle. Kersmash! All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Blaine together again. The same secret surety, he supposed, that he had harbored every time he picked up a pair of dice in some sharpie's back bedroom crap game, every time he called for a hit on 17 while playing blackjack. That feeling that you couldn't go wrong because you were you, the best, the one and only.
"Yeah," he said, sighing. "Silence, a thing I know little about. Thank ye, Cy Blaine, you speak truth."
"I hope you have discovered something which will help you," Blaine said, and Eddie thought, "You fucking mechanical liar."
The complacent tone had returned to Blaine's voice, and Eddie found it of some passing interest that a machine could express such a range of emotion. Had the great old ones built them in, or had Blaine created an emotional rainbow for himself at some point? A little dipolar pretty with which to pass the long decades and centuries.
"Do you wish me to go away again so you may consult?"
"Yes," Roland said. The route map flashed bright red. Eddie turned toward the gunslinger. Roland composed his face quickly, but before he did, Eddie saw a horrible thing, a brief look of complete hopelessness. Eddie had never seen such a look there before. Not when Roland had been dying of the Lobstrosity's bites. Not when Eddie had been pointing the gunslinger's own revolver at him. Not even when the hideous Gasher had taken Jake prisoner and disappeared into Lud with him.
"What do we do next?" Jake asked. "Do another round of the four of us?"
"I think that would serve little purpose," Roland said. "Blaine must know thousands of riddles, perhaps millions, and that is bad. Worse, far worse. He understands the how of riddling, the place the mind has to go in order to make them and solve them." He turned to Eddie and Susanna, sitting once more with their arms about one another. "Am I right about that?" he asked them. "Do you agree?"
"Yes," Susanna said.
And Eddie nodded reluctantly. He didn't want to agree, but he did.
"So?" Jake asked. "What do we do, Roland? I mean, there has to be a way out of this, doesn't there?"
"Lie to him, you bastard," Eddie sent fiercely in Roland's direction. Roland, perhaps hearing the thought, did the best he could. He touched Jake's hair with his diminished hand and ruffled through it. "I think there's always an answer, Jake. The real question is whether or not we'll have time to find the right riddle." He said it took him a little under 9 hours to run his route.
8 hours, 45 minutes, Jake put in.
"And that's not much time. We've already been running almost an hour."
"And if that map's right, we're almost halfway to Topeka,"
Susanna said in a tight voice.
"Could be our mechanical pal's been lying to us about the length of the run, hedging his bets a little."
"Could be," Roland agreed.
"So what do we do?"
Jake repeated. Roland drew in a deep breath, held it, let it out. "Let me riddle him alone for now. I'll ask him the hardest ones I remember from the fair days of my youth. Then, Jake, if we're approaching Topeka at this same speed, with Blaine still unposed, I think you should ask him the last few riddles in your book, the hardest riddles." He rubbed the side of his face distractedly and looked at the ice sculpture. This chilly rendering of his own likeness had now melted to an unrecognizable hulk. "I still think the answer must be in the book. Why else would you have been drawn to it before coming back to this world?"
"And us?" Susanna asked. "What do Eddie and I do?"
"Think," Roland said. "Think for your father's sakes."
"I do not shoot with my hand," Eddie said.
He suddenly felt far away, strange to himself. It was the way he'd felt when he had seen first the slingshot and then the key in pieces of wood, just waiting for him to whittle them free. And at the same time, this feeling was not like that at all. Roland was looking at him oddly. "Yes, Eddie, you say true. A gunslinger shoots with his mind. What have you thought of?"
"Nothing."
He might have said more, but all at once a strange image, a strange memory, intervened. Roland hunkering by Jake at one of their stopping points on the way to Lud. Both of them in front of an unlit campfire. Roland once more at his everlasting lessons. Jake's turn this time, Jake with the flint and steel trying to quicken the fire. Spark after spark licking out and dying in the dark. And Roland had said that he was being silly. That he was just being, well, silly.
"No,"
Eddie said. He didn't say that at all. At least not to the kid, he didn't.
"Eddie?"
Susanna, sounding concerned, almost frightened.
"Well, why don't you ask him what he said, bro?"
That was Henry's voice, the voice of the great sage and eminent junkie. First time in a long time.
"Ask him. He's practically sitting right next to you. Go on and ask him what he said. Quit dancing around like a baby with a load in his diapers."
Except that was a bad idea, because that wasn't the way things worked in Roland's world. In Roland's world, everything was riddles. You didn't shoot with your hand, but with your mind. Your motherfucking mind. And what did you say to someone who wasn't getting the spark into the kindling? Move your flint in closer, of course. And that's what Roland had said. Move your flint in closer and hold it steady. Except none of that was what this was about. It was close, yes, But close only counts in horseshoes, as Henry Dean had been wont to say before he became the great sage and eminent junkie. Eddie's memory was jinking a little because Roland had embarrassed him, shamed him, made a joke at his expense. Probably not on purpose, but something. Something that had made him feel the way Henry always used to make him feel. Of course it was. Why else would Henry be here after such a long absence? All of them looking at him now. Even Oi. "Go on," he told Roland, sounding a little waspish. "You wanted us to think? We're thinking already." He himself was thinking so hard, I shoot with my mind, that his goddamn brains were almost on fire. But he wasn't going to tell old Long Tall and Ugly that. "Go on and ask Blaine some riddles. Do your part." "As you will, Eddie." Roland rose from his seat, went forward, and laid his hand on the scarlet rectangle again. The route map reappeared at once. The green dot had moved farther beyond Rylea, but it was clear to Eddie that the Mono had slowed down significantly, either obeying some built-in program or because Blaine was having too much fun to hurry. "Is your quartet ready to continue our fair day riddling, Roland, son of Stephen?" "Yes, Blaine," Roland said, and to Eddie his voice sounded heavy. "I will riddle you alone for a while now, if you have no objection. As Din and father of your quartet, such is your right, will these be fair day riddles?" "Yes." "Good." Loathsome satisfaction in that voice. "I would hear more of those." "All right." Roland took a deep breath, then began. "Feed me and I live. Give me to drink and I die. What am I?"
"Fire."
No hesitation. Only that insufferable smugness. A tone which said that was old to me when your grandmother was young. But try again. This is more fun than I've had in centuries. So try again. "I pass before the sun, Blaine, yet make no shadow. What am I?"
"Wind."
No hesitation. "You speak true, sigh. Next. This is as light as a feather, yet no man can hold it for long."
"One's breath."
No hesitation.
Yet he did hesitate, Eddie thought suddenly.
Jake and Susanna were watching Roland with agonized concentration, fists clenched, willing him to ask Blaine the right riddle, the stumper, the one with the get-the-fuck-out-of-jail-free card hidden inside it. Eddie couldn't look at them, Suze in particular, and keep his concentration. He lowered his gaze to his own hands, which were also clenched, and forced them to open on his lap. It was surprisingly hard to do. From the aisle, he heard Roland continuing to trot out the golden oldies of his youth. "Riddle me this, Blaine. If you break me, I'll not stop working. If you can touch me, my work is done. If you lose me, you must find me with a ring soon after. What am I?" Susanna's breath caught for a moment, and although he was looking down, Eddie knew she was thinking what he was thinking. That was a good one. A damned good one. Maybe the human heart, Blaine said, still with not a whit of hesitation.
"This riddle is based in large part upon human poetic conceits. See, for instance, John Avery, Saronia Hunts, Ondula, William Blake, James Tate, Veronica Mays, and others. It is remarkable how human beings pitch their minds on love. Yet it is constant from one level of the tower to the next, even in these degenerate days." "Continue, Roland of Gilead."
Susanna's breath resumed. Eddie's hands wanted to clench again, but he wouldn't let them. "Move your flint in closer," he thought in Roland's voice. "Move your flint in closer, for your father's sake." And Blaine the Mono ran on, southeast under the demon moon. Chapter 2. The Falls of the Hounds. 1. Jake didn't know how easy or difficult Blaine might find the last 10 puzzlers in Riddledy Dum, but they looked pretty tough to him. Of course, he reminded himself, he wasn't a thinking machine with a citywide bank of computers to draw on. All he could do was go for it. God hates a coward, as Eddie sometimes said. If the last 10 failed, he would try Aaron Deepnose Samson riddle, out of the eater came forth meat, and so on. If that one also failed, he'd probably... Shit, he didn't know what he'd do, or even how he'd feel. The truth is, Jake thought, I'm fried. And why not? He had gone through an extraordinary swarm of emotions in the last 8 hours or so. First, terror of being sure he and Oi were going to drop off the suspension bridge and to their deaths in the River Send, of being driven through the crazed maze that was Lud by Gasher, of having to look into the TikTok man's terrible green eyes and try to answer his unanswerable questions about time, Nazis, and the nature of transitive circuits. Being questioned by TikTok had been like having to take a final exam in hell. Then the exhilaration of being rescued by Roland, and Oi, without Oi he would almost certainly be toast now. The wonder of all they had seen beneath the city, his awe at the way Susanna had solved Blaine's gate riddle, and the final mad rush to get aboard the Mono before Blaine could release the stocks of nerve gas stored under Lud. After surviving all that, a kind of blissed-out surety had settled over him. Of course Roland would stump Blaine, who would then keep his part of the bargain and set them down safe and sound at his final stop, whatever passed for Topeka in this world. Then they would find the Dark Tower and do whatever they were supposed to do there, write what needed writing, fix what needed fixing. And then they lived happily ever after, of course, like folk in a fairy tale. Except they shared each other's thoughts, Roland had said. Sharing Kef was part of what Ka-Tet meant. And what had been seeping into Jake's thoughts ever since Roland stepped into the aisle and began to try Blaine with riddles from his young days was a sense of doom. It wasn't coming just from the gunslinger. Susanna was sending out the same grim blue-black vibe. Only Eddie wasn't sending it. And that was because he'd gone off somewhere, was chasing his own thoughts. That might be good, but there were no guarantees. And Jake began to be scared again. Worse, he felt desperate, like a creature that is pressed deeper and deeper into its final corner by a relentless foe. His fingers worked restlessly in Oi's fur, and when he looked down at them, he realized an amazing thing. The hand which Oi had bitten into to keep from falling off the bridge no longer hurt. He could see the holes the bumbler's teeth had made, and blood was still crusted in his palm and on his wrist, but the hand itself no longer hurt. He flexed it cautiously. There was some pain, but it was low and distant, hardly there at all. Blaine, what may go up a chimney down, but cannot go down a chimney up? A lady's parasol, Blaine replied in that tone of jolly complacency which Jake, too, was coming to loathe. Thank you, Cy Blaine. Once again you have answered true. Next, Roland. The gunslinger looked around at Jake, and his look of concentration lightened a bit. It wasn't a smile, but it went a little way in that direction, at least, and Jake was glad. What is it, Jake?
My hand. It was hurting like crazy, and now it's stopped.
Shucks, Blaine said in the drawling voice of John Wayne. I couldn't watch a hound suffer with a mashed-up forepaw like that, let alone a fine little trail hand like yourself, so I fixed it up.
How?
Jake asked. Look on the arm of your seat.
Jake did, and saw a faint gridwork of lines. It looked a little like the speaker of the transistor radio he'd had when he was 7 or 8.
Another benefit of traveling Barony class, Blaine went on in his smug voice. It crossed Jake's mind that Blaine would fit in perfectly at the Piper School, the world's first slow-trans dipolar nerd. The Handscan Spectrum Magnifier is a diagnostic tool also capable of administering minor first aid, such as I have performed on you. It is also a nutrient delivery system, a brain pattern recording device, a stress analyzer, and an emotion enhancer which can naturally stimulate the production of endorphins. Handscan is also capable of creating very believable illusions and hallucinations. Would you care to have your first sexual experience with a noted sex goddess from your level of the tower, Jake of New York? Perhaps Marilyn Monroe, Raquel Welch, or Edith Bunker? Jake laughed. He guessed that laughing at Blaine might be risky, but this time he just couldn't help it.
There is no Edith Bunker, he said. She's just a character on a TV show. The actress's name is, Jean Stapleton. Also, she looks like Mrs. Shaw. She's our housekeeper.
Nice, but not, you know, a babe.
A long silence from Blaine. When the voice of the computer returned, a certain coldness had replaced the jocose ain't-we-having-fun tone of voice.
I cry your pardon, Jake of New York. I also withdraw my offer of a sexual experience.
That'll teach me, Jake thought, raising one hand to cover a smile. Aloud, and in what he hoped was a suitably humble tone of voice, he said,
That's okay, Blaine. I think I'm still a little young for that anyway.
Susanna and Roland were looking at each other. Susanna didn't know who Edith Bunker was. All in the family hadn't been on the tube in her when. But she grasped the essence of the situation just the same. Jake saw her full lips form one soundless word and send it to the gunslinger like a message in a soap bubble. Mistake. Yes, Blaine had made a mistake. More, Jake Chambers, a boy of 11, had picked up on it. And if Blaine had made one, he could make another. Maybe there was hope after all. Jake decided he would treat that possibility as he had treated the graph of river crossing and allow himself just a little. 2. Roland nodded imperceptibly at Susanna, then turned back to the front of the coach, presumably to resume riddling. Before he could open his mouth, Jake felt his body pushed forward. It was funny, you couldn't feel a thing when the mono was running flat out, but the minute it began to decelerate, you knew. "Here is something you really ought to see," Blaine said. He sounded cheerful again, but Jake didn't trust that tone. He had sometimes heard his father start telephone conversations that way, usually with some subordinate who had F-U-B, fucked up big. And by the end, Elmer Chambers would be up on his feet, bent over the desk like a man with a stomach cramp, and screaming at the top of his lungs, his cheeks red as radishes, and the circles of flesh under his eyes as purple as an eggplant. "I have to stop here anyway, as I must switch to battery power at this point, and that means pre-charging." The mono stopped with a barely perceptible jerk. The walls around them once more drained of color and then became transparent. Susanna gasped with fear and wonder. Roland moved to his left, felt for the side of the coach so he wouldn't bump his head, then leaned forward with his hands on his knees and his eyes narrowed. Oi began to bark again. Only Eddie seemed unmoved by the breathtaking view which had been provided them by the Barony coach's visual mode. He glanced around once, face preoccupied and somehow bleary with thought, and then looked down at his hands again. Jake glanced at him with brief curiosity, then stared back out. They were halfway across a vast chasm and seemed to be hovering on the moon-dusted air. Beyond them, Jake could see a wide, boiling river. Not the Send, unless the rivers in Roland's world were somehow able to run in different directions at different points in their courses, and Jake didn't know enough about mid-world to entirely discount that possibility. Also, this river was not placid, but raging, a torrent that came tumbling out of the mountains like something that was pissed off and wanted to brawl. For a moment, Jake looked at the trees which dressed the steep slopes along the sides of this river, registering with relief that they looked pretty much all right, the sort of firs you'd expect to see in the mountains of Colorado or Wyoming, say. And then his eyes were dragged back to the lip of the chasm. Here the torrent broke apart and dropped in a waterfall so wide and so deep that Jake thought it made Niagara, where he had gone with his parents, one of three family vacations he could remember, two had been cut short by urgent calls from his father's network, look like the kind you might see in a third-rate theme park. The air filling the enclosing semicircle of the falls was further thickened by an uprushing mist that looked like steam. In it, half a dozen moonbows gleamed like gaudy, interlocking dream jewelry. To Jake, they looked like the overlapping rings which symbolized the Olympics. Jutting from the center of the falls, perhaps 200 feet below the point where the river actually went over the drop, were two enormous stone protrusions. Although Jake had no idea how a sculptor, or a team of them, could have gotten down to where they were, he found it all but impossible to believe that they had simply eroded that way. They looked like the heads of enormous, snarling dogs. "The Falls of the Hounds," he thought.
There was one more stop beyond this, Dasherville, and then Topeka. Last stop, everybody out.
One moment, Blaine said. I must adjust the volume for you to enjoy the full effect.
There was a brief, whispery, hooting sound, a kind of mechanical throat clearing, and then they were assaulted by a vast roar. It was water, 1 billion gallons a minute for all Jake knew, pouring over the lip of the chasm and falling perhaps 2,000 feet into the deep stone basin at the base of the falls. Streamers of mist floated past the blunt, almost faces of the jutting dogs like steam from the vents of hell. The level of sound kept climbing. Now Jake's whole head vibrated with it, and as he clapped his hands over his ears, he saw Roland, Eddie, and Susanna doing the same. Oi was barking, but Jake couldn't hear him. Susanna's lips were moving again, and again he could read the words, "Stop it, Blaine, stop it!" But he couldn't hear them any more than he could hear Oi's barks, although he was sure Susanna was screaming at the top of her lungs. And still, Blaine increased the sound of the waterfall until Jake could feel his eyes shaking in their sockets, and he was sure his ears were going to short out like overstressed stereo speakers. Then, it was over. They still hung above the moon misty drop. The moonbows still made their slow and dreamlike revolutions before the curtain of endlessly falling water. The wet and brutal stone faces of the dog guardians continued to jut out of the torrent. But that world-ending thunder was gone. For a moment, Jake thought what he'd feared had happened, that he had gone deaf. Then he realized that he could hear Oi still barking and Susanna crying. At first these sounds seemed distant and flat, as if his ears had been packed with cracker crumbs. But then they began to clarify. Eddie put his arm around Susanna's shoulders and looked toward the route map.
"Nice guy, Blaine.
I merely thought you would enjoy hearing the sound of the falls at full volume," Blaine said. His booming voice sounded laughing and injured at the same time.
"I thought it might help you to forget my regrettable mistake in the matter of Edith Bunker."
My fault, Jake thought. Blaine may just be a machine and a suicidal one at that, but he still doesn't like to be laughed at. He sat beside Susanna and put his own arm around her. He could still hear the falls of the hounds, but the sound was now distant.
"What happens here?" Roland asked. "How do you charge your batteries?"
"You will see shortly, gunslinger. In the meantime, try me with a riddle."
"All right, Blaine. Here's one of Court's own making and has posed many in its time.
I await it with great interest."
Roland, pausing perhaps to gather his thoughts, looked up at the place where the roof of the coach had been, and where there was now only a starry spill across a black sky. Jake could pick out Aiton and Lydia, old Star and old Mother, and was oddly comforted by the sight of them, still glaring at each other from their accustomed places. Then the gunslinger looked back at the lighted rectangle which served them as Blaine's face.
"We are very little creatures. All of us have different features. One of us in glasses set, one of us you'll find in jet. Another you may see in tin, and a fourth is boxed within. If the fifth you should pursue, it can never fly from you. What are we?"
"A and E and I and O and U," Blaine replied. "The vowels of the high speech."
Still no hesitation, not so much as a whit. Only that voice, mocking and just about 2 steps from laughter. The voice of a cruel little boy watching bugs run around on top of a hot stove.
"Although that particular riddle is not from your teacher, Roland of Gilead. I know it from Jonathan Swift of London, a city in the world your friends come from."
"Thank ye, sigh," Roland said, and his sigh sounded like a sigh. "Your answer is true, Blaine, and undoubtedly what you believe of the riddle's origins is true as well. That Court knew of other worlds is something I long suspected. I think he may have held palaver with the Manny who lived outside the city."
"I care not about the Manny, Roland of Gilead. They were always a foolish sect. Try me with another riddle."
"All right. What has..."
"Hold, hold.
The force of the beam gathers.
Look not directly at the hounds, my interesting new friends. And shield your eyes."
Jake looked away from the colossal rock sculptures jutting from the falls, but didn't get his hand up quite in time. With his peripheral vision, he saw those featureless heads suddenly develop eyes of a fiercely glowing blue. Jagged tines of lightning leaped out of them and toward the mono. Then Jake was lying on the carpeted floor of the Barony coach with the heels of his hands pasted against his closed eyes and the sound of Oi whining in one faintly ringing ear. Beyond Oi, he heard the crackle of electricity as it stormed around the mono. When Jake opened his eyes again, the falls of the hounds were gone. Blaine had opaqued the cabin. He could still hear the sound, though, a waterfall of electricity, a force somehow drawn from the beam and shot out through the eyes of the stone heads. Blaine was feeding himself with it somehow. "When we go on," Jake thought, "he'll be running on batteries. Then Ludd really will be behind us, for good." "Blaine," Roland said, "how is the power of the beam stored in that place? What makes it come from the eyes of yon stone temple dogs? How do you use it?" Silence from Blaine. "And who carved them?" Eddie asked. "Was it the great old ones?" "It was, wasn't it? There were people even before them. Or were they people?" More silence from Blaine. "And maybe that was good." Jake wasn't sure how much he wanted to know about the Falls of the Hounds, or what went on beneath them. He had been in the dark of Roland's world before, and had seen enough to believe that most of what was growing there was neither good nor safe. "Better not to ask him," the voice of little Blaine drifted down from over their heads. "Safer." "Don't ask him silly questions. He won't play silly games," Eddie said. That distant, dreaming look had come onto his face again, and when Susanna spoke his name, he didn't seem to hear. 3. Roland sat down across from Jake and scrubbed his right hand slowly up the stubble on his right cheek, an unconscious gesture he seemed to make only when he was feeling tired or doubtful. "I'm running out of riddles," he said. Jake looked back at him, startled. The gunslinger had posed 50 or more to the computer, and Jake supposed that was a lot to just yank out of your head with no preparation. But when you considered that riddling had been such a big deal in the place where Roland had grown up, he seemed to read some of this on Jake's face, for a small smile, lemon bitter, touched the corners of his mouth, and he nodded as if the boy had spoken out loud. "I don't understand either. If you'd asked me yesterday or the day before, I would have told you that I had at least 1,000 riddles stored up in the junk bin I keep at the back of my mind. Perhaps 2,000. But," he lifted one shoulder in a shrug, shook his head, rubbed his hand up his cheek again, "it's not like forgetting. It's as if they were never there in the first place. What's happening to the rest of the world is happening to me, I reckon." "You're moving on," Susanna said, and looked at Roland with an expression of pity which Roland could look back at for only a second or two. It was as if he felt burned by her regard. "Like everything else here."
"Yes, I fear so." He looked at Jake, lips tight, eyes sharp. "Will you be ready with the riddles from your book when I call on you?"
"Yes."
"Good. And take heart, we're not finished yet." Outside, the dim crackle of electricity ceased.
"I have fed my batteries and all is well," Blaine announced. "Marvelous," Susanna said dryly.
"Less,"
Oi agreed, catching Susanna's sarcastic tone exactly. "I have a number of switching functions to perform. These will take about 40 minutes and are largely automatic. While this switchover takes place and the accompanying checklist is running, we shall continue our contest. I am enjoying it very much."
"It's like when you have to switch over from electric to diesel on the train to Boston," Eddie said. He still sounded as if he wasn't quite with them. "At Hartford or New Haven or one of those other places where no one in their right fucking mind would want to live."
"Eddie?" Susanna asked.
"What are you?" Roland touched her shoulder and shook his head.
"Never mind, Eddie of New York," Blaine said in his expansive, gosh, but this is fun voice. That's right, Eddie said. Never mind Eddie of New York. He knows no good riddles. But you know many, Roland of Gilead. Try me with another. And as Roland did just that, Jake thought of his final essay. Blaine is a pain, he had written there. Blaine is a pain, and that is the truth. It was the truth, all right. The stone truth. A little less than an hour later, Blaine the Mono began to move again. Four. Susanna watched with dreadful fascination as the flashing dot approached Dasherville, passed it, and made its final dogleg for home. The dot's movement said that Blaine was moving a bit more slowly now that it had switched over to batteries, and she fancied the lights in the Barony coach were a little dimmer. But she didn't believe it would make much difference in the end. Blaine might reach his terminus in Topeka doing 600 miles an hour instead of 800, but his last load of passengers would be toothpaste either way. Roland was also slowing down, going deeper and deeper into that mental junk bin of his to find riddles. Yet he did find them, and he refused to give up. As always. Ever since he had begun teaching her to shoot, Susanna had felt a reluctant love for Roland of Gilead, a feeling that seemed a mixture of admiration, fear, and pity. She thought she would never really like him, and that the Dead or Walker part of her might always hate him for the way he had seized hold of her and dragged her raving into the sun. But her love was nonetheless strong. He had, after all, saved Eddie Dean's life and soul, had rescued her beloved. She must love him for that, if for nothing else. But she loved him even more, she suspected, for the way he would never, never give up. The word retreat didn't seem to be in his vocabulary, even when he was discouraged, as he so clearly was now. Blaine, where may you find roads without carts, forests without trees, cities without houses? On a map. You say true, Si. Next, I have 100 legs but cannot stand, a long neck but no head, I eat the maid's life. What am I? A broom, gunslinger. Another variation ends, I ease the maid's life. I like yours better. Roland ignored this. Cannot be seen, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt. It lies behind the stars and beneath the hills. Ends life and kills laughter. What is it, Blaine? The dark. Thank you, Si, you speak true. The diminished right hand slid up the right cheek. The old fretful gesture. And the minute scratching sound produced by the calloused pads of his fingers made Susanna shiver. Jake sat cross-legged on the floor, looking at the gunslinger with a kind of fierce intensity. This thing runs but cannot walk, sometimes sings but never talks, lacks arms, has hands, lacks a head but has a face. What is it, Blaine?
A clock.
Shit, Jake whispered, lips compressing. Susanna looked over at Eddie and felt a passing ripple of irritation. He seemed to have lost interest in the whole thing, had zoned out in his weird 1980s slang. She thought to throw an elbow into his side, wake him up a little, then remembered Roland shaking his head at her and didn't. You wouldn't know he was thinking, not from that slack expression on his face. But maybe he was. If so, you better hurry it up a little, Precious, she thought. The dot on the route map was still closer to Dasherville than Topeka, but it would reach the halfway point within the next 15 minutes or so. And still the match went on, Roland serving questions, Blaine sending the answers whistling right back at him, low over the net and out of reach. What builds up castles, tears down mountains, makes some blind, helps others to see? Sand. Thank you, Si. What lives in winter, dies in summer, and grows with its roots upward, an icicle. Blaine, you say true. Man walks over, man walks under. In time of war, he burns asunder. A bridge. Thank you, Si. A seemingly endless parade of riddles marched past her, one after the other, until she lost all sense of their fun and playfulness. Had it been so in the days of Roland's youth, she wondered, during the riddle contests of Wide Earth and Full Earth, when he and his friends, although she had an idea they hadn't all been his friends, no, not by a long chalk, had vied for the Fair Day Goose? She guessed that the answer was probably yes. The winner had probably been the one who could stay fresh longest, keep his poor, bludgeoned brains aerated somehow. The killer was the way Blaine came back with the answer so damned promptly each time. No matter how hard the riddle might seem to her, Blaine served it right back to their side of the court. Ka-slam! "Blaine, what has eyes yet cannot see?"
"There are four answers," Blaine replied. "Needles, storms, potatoes, and a true lover."
"Thank'ee, Si Blaine, you speak. Listen, Roland of Gilead, listen, Ka-Tet."
Roland fell silent at once, his eyes narrowing, his head slightly cocked.
"You will shortly hear my engines begin to cycle up," Blaine said. "We are now exactly 60 minutes out of Topeka. At this point, if we've been riding for 7 hours or more, I grew up with a Brady Bunch," Jake said.
Susanna looked around apprehensively, expecting some new terror or small act of cruelty in response to Jake's sarcasm. But Blaine only chuckled. When he spoke again, the voice of Humphrey Bogart had resurfaced.
"Time's different here, sweetheart. You must know that by now. But don't worry. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. Would I lie to you?"
"Yes," Jake muttered.
That apparently struck Blaine's funny bone because he began to laugh again, the mad, mechanical laughter that made Susanna think of funhouses in sleazy amusement parks and roadside carnivals. When the lights began to pulse and sync with the laughter, she shut her eyes and put her hands over her ears.
"Stop it, Blaine! Stop it!"
"Beg pardon, ma'am," drawled the aw-shucks voice of Jimmy Stewart.
I'm right sorry if I ruined your ears with my risibility."
"Ruin this," Jake said, and hoisted his middle finger at the route map. Susanna expected Eddie to laugh. You could count on him to be amused by vulgarity at any time of the day or night, she would have said. But Eddie only continued looking down at his lap, his forehead creased, his eyes vacant, his mouth hung slightly agape. He looked a little too much like the village idiot for comfort, Susanna thought, and again had to restrain herself from throwing an elbow into his side to get that doltish look off his face. She wouldn't restrain herself for much longer. If they were going to die at the end of Blaine's run, she wanted Eddie's arms around her when it happened, Eddie's eyes on her, Eddie's mind with hers. But for now, better let him be.